Welcome to Let's Get Ugly, the podcast where we dive deep into the latest beauty, wellness, and lifestyle secrets that aren't always pretty, but always real.
We're your co-hosts, Trishna and Disha.
The sister duo keeping it 100% authentic, really sassy, and silly all at the same time.
We are so silly, so sassy. So come join us, grab your favorite drink, and welcome to Let's Get Ugly.
And welcome.
Hello.
We are so excited to have you with us for this week's episode. I'm your journey from the south of France to London, from reality TV to stripping. I mean, there's a lot to cover for today. And, you know, being an author is definitely going to be one thing that we're going to talk about as well. But we can just can't wait to dig into your story and see how you've broken down all of those barriers, really.
I found you on TikTok in the pandemic.
Yep.
And it was hilarious. Like, M's content is just so funny. And I feel like a sense of humor is something that's really, like, ingrained within you. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about your childhood? Like, why did you move to a big city? Where did you come from? How has life changed? And where do you get your sense of humor from?
I think my sense of humor is just me being very honest, and people find it funny. And I'm like, maybe it can come across rude, but like most people find it like quite funny. So yeah, I guess I'm just being very transparent and people are like, oh my God, this is so funny. I grew up in the south of France, in a very small town, and we just like moved around. Grateful that I grew up in the countryside, but it was something within me that I'm like, I just don't belong there. You know, like everyone knowing each other, you know, it's just, I was like, it's not for me. And then just one day, I think when I was like maybe 10 or 11 years old, something like that, Sex and the City just appeared. And I thought, wow, this is the life that I want. You know, I want to go out. I want to go for brunches. I want to like a big group of friends. I want to speak English because obviously I was not speaking like a word of English when I was little. I mean, until I moved to England, I was not speaking a word of English. So I was, oh, I really want to speak English. I want to like this big life, you know, where you can wear like different clothes and like have a sense of fashion.
Interesting.
Like that show has had such an impact on people in such different ways, like about female friendships.
Yeah.
All those exciting things. But I mean, when you moved to England, you decided to take a turn on reality TV.
Was that your move? Was that your move then? Like your first segue into the UK was TV? No.
Oh, no. It took me maybe like 10, 12 years to get into TV. I had like many line of job before getting in there. So I was like a nanny, I was a sales assistant, I was a visual merchandiser. Like, I had so many like different line of jobs. And then I had a 9-to-5 that was very intense, very interesting. I loved it. I loved my team, but I feel like I just want to do something more, you know. And then something quite personal happened. And I thought, do you know what? I just want to take control of my life. I want to do me, what I want to do and not what people want me to do, you know, just have like a life like anyone else, you know, like your 9-to-5, going home, having your husband, your kids. I was like, it's just not for me. And I was so down and so like, not depressed, but I was feeling really down. And I said, come on, you know, when you're feeling really sad at some point in your life, you're like, you have that fire and you think, yeah, let's just do something different. So that was like after 12 years of being in England. I've been cast for Love Island a few times.
No.
Yeah. I went to the ITV studio. I did the whole casting thing and that, and it never took me on board, which is fine. And I thought, if English reality TV is interested in me, but maybe they don't see a potential is because maybe they want just English people, you know, like British people. So I thought, why not just try French reality TV? So I just applied to a French reality TV and then it just worked.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. So what was the plot of the show, actually? Because that's the one thing I was like, I haven't been able to figure out.
I'm trying to keep it like sort of confidential, but it's a show called Temptation Island. So the concept is 4 or 5 couples and they're going on an island. I mean, on 2 different islands, and they just separate for like 2 weeks with no contact. So obviously the men in a relationship would live with bombshell for like 2 weeks, something like that, and the female vice versa. And then they have no contact, and every other night there is like a fire camp where they can see like images of their partner and see what they're doing. So this show was very popular in France back in like the 2000s. So it was very, very trashy. You know, it's not like in today's world when you have to be careful of what you're saying and the way women are portraying, etc. The way it was when I was there was very chilled. It was, you know, no nudity, no sex. But it was almost to the point where it was really boring. And obviously the men knew, you know, it was not like back in the 2000s where people didn't have the code of reality TV. So they were like virgins, if that makes sense. So yeah, it was a bit to the point where they were just calculating everything. So not much was happening. So even my mom, when she watched it, she was like, that's more like a retirement house, more than just like, you know, like nothing was happening. So yeah, but it gave me like a good insight of reality TV and how.
So did it kind of change your views on like fame and what you wanted out of life then? Was that like that pivotal moment?
Yeah, I really thought I wanted to be in reality TV. I was like, yeah, because I just want to be me. I want to show my personality. But then you realize once you're in a show that yes, you can have your personality, but you have also an entire production behind you, guiding you, telling you most of the time what to do, or like, oh, he likes you, maybe you should go with him, or maybe you should say that, oh, she said that, you know, like, are you going to argue with her? So the more you do with someone else, the more time you have on camera. The more time on camera means the more money. So that's what the producer is literally telling you. They're briefing you this before you start the show. And I thought to myself, it's sort of like a disguise prostitution, because you don't like that person and it's like, okay, I'm gonna kiss or even doing more with that person that I don't really like, but I'm getting paid for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was to this point, because I did two shows, and on the second show, when I feel like they're really taking the piss out of me because the production lied to me about the role that I was supposed to have, I said, no, I'm done. I don't want a producer telling me what I have to do. In that case, I'd rather become a stripper, make my own money, like choose who I want to speak to in a strip club, pay for my acting classes of what I want to do, and I'm in control. It's my choice, not a producer's choice. So it changed a lot of my perspective about fame and reality TV.
Wow, that is so interesting. I think that perspective that you've given us is so valuable and really segues really nicely into my next question, mm-hmm. which is, what was that moment where you were like, I'm going to become a stripper, and how did you even start?
The way it happened is, since I was a little girl, so in France we've got like the Moulin Rouge in Paris.
Of course.
So the Moulin Rouge has always been shown on the 31st of December for, you know, the New Year's Eve on TV, and I was always amazed by, you know, the costume, the lighting, like the beautiful woman. I was like, oh my god, this is what I want to become when I'm going to be older. Obviously, you know, you need to train, you need to be a professional dancer. But when I came to London, every time I used to walk past all the strip clubs, I was just so intrigued, you know, it was just in me. I always thought, my God, like, what's happening in there? And then the movie Hustler came out, I think in 2018, 2019. And this was, I think, after I did reality TV. And I thought, yeah, this is what I want to do. Like, this is it. I'm going to become a stripper. So I think like reality TV and seeing Hustler was the breaking point. The only thing I did was just going on Google, search best strip club in London. And the first one that came up, I was like, yeah, let's go. Let's do an audition. So you just call them or you check their website. Everyone's got a different process. So you've got an audition to go for an audition, and you literally just go on stage. They just want to see your body, how you look like, a bit of your personality, see if you can speak English, obviously. And then, yeah, they say yes or no.
Wow. Wow.
Oh, it sounds quite competitive then, because it's almost like you're auditioning for a TV role again.
Yeah. I mean, some clubs are a bit more, you know, on it than others. Some are like more chilled, so it's fine. You know, they're not that picky, let's say. But some clubs are quite picky, you know, so they ask like loads of questions. And yeah, it's literally just you on a stage with other girls. Sometimes there's other girls waiting as well. So it's like, oh, she's my competition. Like, but sometimes they take everyone. Sometimes they don't take anyone. So
I mean, we were talking about this when we were having a chat off camera, and we were just saying how like, there is so many different varieties of stripping and strip clubs, and you've got very exclusive, very elite, and then you have stage, and you've got ones that kind of feel like almost like a pub. It's quite interesting to see how dynamic that industry is, mm-hmm. but also how in control the women that work there are. And I think what was fascinating was we were likening it to sales. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
I get loads of girls, Miss Jimmy, like, how do I become a stripper? What do I need? You know, and a lot of people just think it's just dancing. You're just on stage and people throwing dollars at you. Yeah, maybe that's what they do in America, but we're in England, so it's a bit different. We do have loads of like pole dancers as well, thinking they just need to do pole tricks, and they don't imagine like they're going to have to be fully nude, fully naked in private with a gentleman. So they're like, no, maybe I'm not comfortable doing that. It's like, no, you're going to have to. So there is like so many different aspects about stripping, because you have to be comfortable being nude. Then you have to be comfortable talking to complete strangers, because you need to approach probably like 10, 20 men during the night, be like, hey, how are you? Do you want a private dance? You need to understand who you have in front of you, changing your approach, because then you can have the party guy that just want a party girl. Then you can have the more shy guy that is his first time. And so you need to be a bit more chilled and relaxed and sweet, you know? So you need to have that kind of understanding about who you have in front of you. And yeah, knowing how to sell, because you are selling your time, you're selling your dances. So people just think it's that easy and people would say yes, but you have loads of convincing to do, especially in this economy.
For sure.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, I think the other thing about stripping as well that we kind of spoke about before off camera was a stage name, right? Because that reflects your persona and how you embody yourself as a performer.
I don't even know how I came up with a stage name, because they just asked you like, oh, you need a fake name, you need a stage name, you know? A random name that I thought was a bit more spicy than mine, let's say. And when you have that name, like every night, you know, it's your not your real name, you just become more that character. Because in my real life, I don't wear like so much makeup or do my hair or like obviously have lingerie and that. So when obviously while you're getting ready and you put on that persona, you just become that other person. It's not just strippers, any artist, anyone in the public eye, you know, either you're a singer, dancer, an actor. And I think loads of artists would say that is like in real life, they're usually a bit more reserved, a bit more shy. They just want time alone. And then as soon as they put their costume on, their makeup on, their persona, it's like, let's roll.
It's like Tate McRae when she turns into Tatiana.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many examples, right? Like you've got Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Beyonce.
Madonna as well. Mm. So, I mean, it's cool. We would love to know about the value or the importance of a stage name, because it is definitely that persona.
Yeah.
But it is also about protecting yourself.
Yeah.
Could you give us a little bit of an insight on why someone might need to protect themselves with a stage name?
I think it's to create a sort of like boundary as well, you know, just to separate your personal life to this kind of life, because it's not just like any normal job, if that makes sense. And it's a safety thing as well, because we have a lot of, you know, men, they want, unfortunately, it can happen. You can have some creeps, and the fact that you have a fake name, it doesn't give them access to the real you, where you live, you know, and find you on social media, things like that.
It is something that can be quite scary to go through as well, mm-hmm. I can imagine, because you feel like it's kind of following you.
But to be fair, I mean, as a woman, it doesn't matter if you're a stripper or not, you can have creeps on social media, at work. And this is what, even when you're like dating someone, you're going on like a dating app, I think it's better to put like a fake name than your real name, because you have no idea how people can find you. So yeah, it's just, you have creep no matter what. It's not because you are a stripper. Because I can already hear people say, oh, you choose to work in this industry, or like, oh, it's because it's that line of job, that's why you get creeps. It's like, come on. We know that's not the case. As women, you get that no matter what.
Definitely. True. I love the dating app persona.
Yeah, always, always. Even when you're in the club or like you go out, always give a fake name. You never know.
I do that when I go out. Yeah. I always give a fake. I give your name.
Oh, great.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah. So they're going to find her then.
Yeah, great.
I was like,
great.
Yeah, they'll find her.
That's good. That's great. I wanted to ask you a little bit about freelancing. Mm-hmm. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the adult industry is very, very much freelancing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have to give a cut to where you work.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you manage your highs and lows within the industry?
It's so hard. That is something that I understood like really quick, because I remember my first night, I made so much money and I'd never seen that amount of money. But two nights after, I made like £50. And it's like, whoa, 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 what's going on? Because you think you're going to have great nights every night, and then suddenly you make barely anything and you think, wow, this is what it is to be self-employed. So I think it's not just women in the adult industry, it's just any freelance. What is good is that you have that flexibility. It's not like a 9-to-5 or like any normal job where you have someone above you, not controlling you, I don't want to say that, but you know, it is a different way of living. If you like the flexibility and that, it can be amazing, but you need to understand money, you need to understand savings and just managing yourself, because loads of girls, they've been doing this job for like 10, 15 years and they don't have any savings, because it's just like, yeah, let's live the vida loca. But then it's like, oh shit, there is COVID happening and you don't have any savings, and it can be very, very hard on yourself, and you just have to find that money. So managing the lows, I don't know, I think I'm still going through it. It's just like, but some people love it. It's just having that roller coaster, you know, that emotion is like, whoa, I made so much money. You know, it gives you like a thrill, But then after that is the downhill. It's like, oh. So you just, I guess it's just part of your personality as well.
Really interesting. Do you think it's taught you anything about control and kind of self-worth as well?
Yeah, it does. Because, I mean, it took me a while, to be fair, until even last year. I was still very much like, oh, one life, let's just spend it, you know. But this year I thought, you know, I'm like almost 34. It's time to, you can spend your money, but I never spend the money that I don't have, if that makes sense. I know some people do that. Never spend the money that you don't have. Spend what you have, but still like put a little bit on the side. So yeah, it taught me how to be a bit more in control, yeah.
I would love to talk about your book.
Yeah, please.
Clarity, right? Yeah. I actually feel like your book challenges a lot of perceptions about the adult industry. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I wanted to know was, why did you write it? And what message did you want to convey through it?
I always had the writer inside me. Since I was maybe, I think 4 years old, I started to write little stories, just, you know, to draw some stories, staple it together. I remember my mom buying me a old typewriter, is that how you call it? So I used to write letters to my friends. I just love writing. I always had like a journal, like a diary, you know, because I've got sometimes quite a hard time to express myself. I can be quite shy. You know, when you write, it's just your own self therapy, if that makes sense. Because I had so many different jobs and so many different lives, you know, I always had people, oh my God, your life is a movie. Like, you should write a book, you should write a vlog, you should do YouTube, you should do something about it. So it's always been in the back of my mind. And then obviously when I started stripping, I thought, yeah, I really need to tell the story. This is too good. This is amazing. So I started to write just my stripper stories. And then someone that I knew, he was like, come on, just send me what you wrote. I just want to read a little bit. And he said, this is great, but your reader need to understand where you are coming from, need to write about your childhood, need to write about the rest in order for them to understand why you are the way you are. I always thought about like the injustice we have as women. So even before I started stripping, you know, when I was in my 9-to-5 or just in my life in general, I feel like we've always been judged. And so my book is not just about how strippers or female in the adult industry are being judged. It's about how women are being judged no matter what. Because if you're getting a certain age, it's like, oh, you know, married, or you don't have kids. So there's always a judgment. So it's just challenging. It's not just challenging women in the adult industry. It's just challenging about how society is viewing women.
I think that's so interesting. I was also going to ask about the cover of the book.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. How did you go about the process of illustrating it? What does that cover mean to you?
So if I'm being totally transparent, so I put all the savings that I had back then in this book. So I wrote it entirely myself. No one wrote it for me. It was not a ghostwriter. But obviously my first language is French. It's not English. So I had to hire an editing company just to edit if there is like any mistakes or anything like that. And they had a packaging of like, oh, we can do the cover for you and a bit of marketing. I didn't really know what to do about it because I didn't want any like stripper heels, any like not tacky, but any obvious thing. I just wanted to be quite like mysterious and discreet. And I think I found, if I'm being honest, like a picture of like a woman on Google search. And I was like, what? So it's not exactly this one, but we got inspired just by the face of a woman, you know, and she looks quite like deep in her thoughts, you know? So I was like, yes, look like me most of the time, always like in my own world. So
amazing.
That's amazing. I mean, even in the book, you talk about chaotic sides of relationships, personal life. It really does go into that.
Yeah.
How did those struggles kind of influence you to take control of your destiny?
You know, obviously when you move to a different country at a young age, or obviously things that happen when you are a teenager, some people are like, I would say they are blessed to grow up in a loving environment. They don't experience any like trouble, which is amazing, you know, they can feel that they can count on people. But when you don't grow up like that, and when obviously you get like disappointment after disappointment, can like feel and understand that you can count on nobody and you just have to count on yourself. This is what happened. You just end up being the own boss of your destiny, you know. It's just like, okay, I have to do it on my own, you know.
Speaking of being your own boss, we were chatting about influencer economy and, you know, obviously that was a really, really big thing. I think growing a social capital and a community nowadays is really valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But monetizing off of it is not that easy.
No, it's not. And I think people get surprised when some influencers are being totally transparent. They're like, I don't even earn money. I don't even earn that much money. People would think like, oh, here we go. They've got like 300,000 followers or even 1 million. I know so many girls that got like over 1 million followers. They don't earn anything of social media directly, unless they've got like an OnlyFans or something like that, brand that decide who they deem, yes, they're worth it or not. So, and obviously for female in the adult industry, especially in this country, it's a bit harder, I would say.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think women in the adult industry are overlooked?
I have no clue. I think also it's the era we're in. If you look at like the 90s, 2000, I don't think people cared that much. You know, they had like Pamela Anderson with Playboy, even Kim Kardashian. I mean, she started with a sex tape, if you look at it. Marilyn Monroe as well started on Playboy. Even if you look at Coco Chanel, the world famous sugar baby / prostitute, you know. But I think we're in an era today where it's like people are pretending to be beige, if that makes sense, to be all like very polished when in their personal life they're not. But that's what we are promoting right now. So brands are playing very safe, especially in this country. It's like, no. Let's play safe. Because even a few years ago, if you look at like Jordy Shaw, for example, was quite trash, you know. I love that show, to be fair. So brands were like, yeah, we can work with them. It's fine. I think like in today's world, in 2024, it's a bit too risky for them, which is a shame because, I mean, so many people ask me, what lip liner do you use? Like, how do you do your hair? Or like even other girls, you know? And especially if you're looking at like the beauty industry, female in the adult industry are using lingerie, makeup and everything. So it's quite unfair.
Yeah.
Because they would rather take people from, I don't know, like Love Island or other reality TV when they actually like sleep on camera, you know? And so it's a bit like hypocritical.
Yeah, I completely agree with that.
It really is. I mean, what changes do you think needs to be made from a brand perspective to kind of work cohesively within this industry? Like, what do they need to do?
Oh, they just need to be totally honest and transparent, not pretending to be all inclusive, you know, and to not discriminate people, because everyone is inclusive until is regarding female in the adult industry. You know, no matter what background, like your ethnicity, if you are in the adult industry, it's like you don't exist anymore. So it's like everyone is inclusive of like colors and background and everything, as long as you're not in that industry. If you're in the industry, it's like, no, we don't want to work with you. So I think they just need to like stop being hypocrites. That's all. Just be like, come on, let's. I think you just need like one brand to be like, we're going to take that risk. We're going to be bold. We're going to do it. And then the rest will follow. But I think in America, for example, they're not as uptight. Even in Australia, I don't know why in the UK is so, there's such a snobbism about it.
I feel like also in the UK, the market is so small and it's so competitive. And I feel like a lot of brands actually don't branch out, maybe possibly into any influencer marketing that's not proven.
Yeah.
It's very historical here. At least that's something that I've noticed. In the beauty industry anyway.
Definitely. It's always the same vibe that keeps getting pushed out again and again. And it's been that way for how many years now?
Yeah.
Is it really branched?
It's the same people on reality TV. It's the same influencer. And it just become very boring, I would say.
Mm. Yeah.
It definitely does add into that. I mean, the other thing I wanted to ask was, obviously, like, I feel like there was a moment where people were glamorizing OnlyFans. Like, for example, talking about reality TV, like Larsa Pippen on The Real Housewives of Miami really talks up her OnlyFans account. Don't know if you watch it.
No, I don't.
No, that's a good show.
Yeah?
It's worth it, honestly. Like, we love all the housewives. We have a problem.
I'm watching the one from Cheshire.
Oh,
love this one so much. I'm not moving to Cheshire one day.
you would love Beverly Hills and Miami. Yeah. Give it a go.
I think I danced for one of the housewives when I was in Cannes. Oh. She came with her husband. I don't know which show, but my friend was really upset. She was like, I can't believe you danced for her. Like, I'm watching the series and then I was like, I don't know her. But like, it was one of the housewives. I don't know if it was Atlanta or like another one, but it was one of the housewives. Yeah.
Got some digging to do.
Yeah. Yes.
In terms of kind of how people have been glamorizing it, do you think that even with this glamour around OnlyFans and things like that, it's still hindering any sort of growth, basically? Like in terms of brands wanting to work with people, because OnlyFans is seen as so glamorous, right?
Oh, would you say that?
In terms of...
Would you say people are like less judgy of OnlyFans, for example, compared to like a stripper?
Yeah.
Would you say that?
I think that there is a bigger acceptance with OnlyFans only because of how it emerged. Mm-hmm. Because it was really kind of the pandemic and the big switch happened when women in the adult industry could no longer physically work. Mm-hmm. So their work became really heavily digitized.
Yeah.
And I actually think that because of that, And because it felt like a little bit closer in nature to social media, maybe. Patreon and OnlyFans really did kind of become much more quicker accepted.
Yeah. I think it depends on who. If it's someone with a big platform already, it's like, oh, they're just doing like a little bit extra because they want extra money or whatever. Like, that's the thing to do. So brand, because they're already a big name, brand will be like, it's fine. They're already a big name. We can work with them. But take someone that's doing OnlyFans that doesn't have that much of a big platform, that won't work. It's always is depending on who is doing what. And it's the same. I know there is, she was talking about, like, she created an OnlyFans and she was saying how she got, like, criticized by everyone because obviously she's not as, I would say, relevant anymore. And she made a point. She said, I can't believe, like, because I'm showing my boobs, I'm being, like, criticized. But then you would have Kate Moss, for example, on the runway, on the cover in Vogue. And that's like, oh, that's art. So you see, it's all, they, like, the finality is the same. The boob is out. Yeah, you know, at some point it's like, come on. There's always like, oh, this is art. This is not art. But once again, it's being hypocritical to me.
For sure. I mean, nudity from a perspective of art versus nudity from a perspective of the adult industry, it's a fair point. You know, it is the same anatomy. It is the same stuff. Your junk's out. Your junk's out.
Yeah, exactly. It's out. But there is, like, where I'm from in France, we have so many, like, author movies, and they're usually, like, very sexual. It's the limit of porn, you know? And it's like, but this is art because he made it and he's a known person. So that's totally acceptable. Have you ever watched, like, a French author movie where it's like, whoa, this is porn, but it's been shown at the Cannes Film Festival and it's totally fine because, you know, but then you would have someone else doing a sensual thing. It's like, oh my God, shame on you.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah. The double standards. Interesting.
But it's the same with like Magic Mike, Dream Boys. It's all over the tube, all over Leicester Square. That's totally cool, totally fine. But then would you have like a strip club billboard? Like, no chance. And Channing Tatum is living his like dream life. He was a stripper before. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yeah.
But it's fine. His story is inspiring. Male stripper wanted to become an actor. Do the reverse. It's like, do not ever say that you were a stripper if you want to become an actress. Double standards.
Really big double standard.
Yeah, massively.
Definitely. I mean, I think it's just wild how we're functioning in across all these different industries in a way in which it's like one rule is for you, one rule is for someone else, especially in the year that we're in, right?
Oh, there's still so much work to do, so much like education to have on the subject. And also the reason I started my TikTok and talk about the stripping industry was never to glamorize the industry. Like, the adult industry should not be glamorized in any way. You know, it's not like there is risk to this job, but like any job, but it should be respected.
Yes.
That is the reason that I started. It's like, I don't want to push young girls to do it, not at all. You know, you need to think twice before getting into this kind of industry, either stripping, OnlyFans, escorting, whatever. Think twice before doing it. But still, it should be respected and considered as a job.
I mean, it is a job.
Yeah, it is.
It is, at the end of the day, no matter how you dice it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk a little bit about beauty and self-care, because I feel like it is a really important role for any performer, right? Anybody... Mm-hmm. That has to look after their appearance if they're going to be on stage or, you know, whatever it may be. That was something that was obviously top of the list. Were there any, like, hacks that you learned?
No hacks as such, you know, like, beauty is quite personal, you know, every girl's got their own little thing.
Yeah. Go on, tell us what was yours.
It's nothing crazy, you know, like, some girls would use just baby powder all over their body because you do sweat a lot. You do sweat, like, massively. So just always have, like, deodorant. Oh, baby wipes. Strippers will always have baby wipes because, once again, I don't know if I can say it down here, if you go to the bathroom, you cannot wipe with, like, normal toilet paper because then you might risk to have, like, some leftover, you know?
Oh,
so
yeah.
So you just need to make sure you're clean. So that's the process. You have your baby wipes, and then after that, you go to the mirror, you check yourself out to make sure you're, like, ready to go.
I love that.
That's not a hack, but it's more like a secret.
Yeah. Toilet paper remnants are gross anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
Use a wipe. Use a baby wipe. Yeah.
I love that.
I don't think you expected that.
No.
I was expecting, like, I don't know, something else about, like, skincare the night before, like...
Disha was expecting a face mask.
There is not the night before, because you come home at 6 a.m., so you just shower and you go to bed. There is nothing, like, massively to be prepared for, you know?
Did you always take your makeup off?
Always. I know some girls that don't, but, like, you just dance for, like, 6 to 8 hours. Just shower. Like, I've seen some girls that don't. I find it gross, especially depending on where you dance. Some countries, they're allowed to touch you. So imagine, just shower. So yeah, always take my makeup off. I might not put my creams on because, you know, you need to let the cream sit in and that. So but just, yeah, always makeup off.
That's probably why your skin looks so good.
Oh my God, it's so not. I work all day as well. It's so shiny now for me, but thank you.
But in terms of the persona that you created, were there anything different from a beauty perspective that you would do for the persona versus you as a person?
For the persona, so when I used to work nights, obviously, so, you know, your persona also come with your surrounding. So depending where you work, because obviously it's a strip club, so there's like red lighting and the disco ball. Like, I love the lighting. Everyone looks good in a club, you know? So obviously, because it's quite dark, you need to have like quite a strong makeup, if that makes sense. And I've got like dark hair, dark eyes. I'm pretty sure it's the same for you girls. You know, when you want to build something like, more intense, I always use black coal. Like, that's my thing. Like, I cannot just wear mascara. If not, you look a bit too bland, you know? So yeah, dark eyes, I would say. Black coal all the time, yeah. And tones of lip gloss.
I love that. Yeah. But in terms of like wellness and things like that, like, were there any like self-care things that you would do? Would it be like in terms of like, I don't know, making sure not to drink a certain amount of days or things like that?
So when I used to dance, because I stopped dancing like a year ago, I used to go to the gym a lot and dancing on top of that. So that keeps you fit, you know, for the nights. But if not, I used to like obviously shower every single day. But like a salt bath once a week. Because if you're a bit spiritual as well, loads of strippers are very, very spiritual. So it's like, oh my God, I need to cleanse of all the bad energy. So it's like salt bath with some sage and you just like cleanse yourself. Yeah.
No, that's great.
Yeah, loads of strippers used to do that. And crystals as well with you every single night.
Oh my gosh, where did you keep them? Just like...
Purse. You walk around with your little purse, so you just have your cash mixed with your crystals.
What's your crystal of choice? Tiger's eye?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah, that was the one. And like the green one as well. I just had like a bunch
tourmaline,
of one.
Probably.
And like a yellowish one.
Citrine.
Yeah. Citrine. Yeah.
Oh, abundance crystal.
Yeah, abundance. So you just do a ritual before you go to the club. It's like, please, universe.
Yeah, please.
Keep me safe and money on at the same time. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, that was a ritual, to be fair, yeah.
I love that. I think I knew I could get something witchy out of you.
Yeah.
I knew and I could sense it. I was like, she's definitely...
Massively.
She's going to tell us something witchy, which is what I want to hear.
Yeah. It's true.
So before you go, we have three quick fire beauty related questions that we ask every guest.
Sure.
You're ready.
I hope I am.
So the first one is, what's one beauty rule you love breaking?
To not follow any rule.
Yeah. Okay.
Literally don't follow trends, because I tried to follow trends many times and, for example, the clean makeup doesn't look good on me, you know? So it's just like, do what makes you feel good. What makes you feel confident, you know?
Love that.
Not following your rule, yeah.
So if you could give your younger self one piece of beauty advice, what would it be?
Oh my God, choose the right shade of foundation, which I'm not sure to still have right, but yeah. Oh my God, back in like the 2000, you know, when you used to just wear the foundation like here.
Oh
like
yeah.
Orange and like terracotta on top and yeah, so just chill on the bronzer.
I love that. Chill on the bronzer. What's a beauty moment on yourself, like good or bad, that you'll never forget? What's the most memorable thing?
When I used to dance every night, I used to be like, wow, I'm the shit, you know, I look so freaking good. And then when I used to wake up, I was like, oh my God, I look like a dead veg, like I look like a dead ghost, you know. So yeah, I guess.
Fair enough. I love that. It was daily. It was a cycle.
A cycle, yeah.
Amazing. Well, I'll let you move on to your card segment.
Stay neutral. Not in terms of your makeup, just in terms of like if there was like a situation or something you were hoping to address, your best route is to stay neutral.
Okay.
With all the planets in retrograde, especially Mercury, this is the best advice to anyone.
Yeah.
Now,
stay neutral. Okay.
But Em, thank you so much for sharing.
No, thanks to you, girls. Thank you for having me.
We loved having your insights, talking about your journey, and just kind of getting to know all the kind of facets of how you came to be where you are today.
I mean, we learned so much about the real work that goes behind the glamour and the rituals. I thought were super interesting.
Yeah. Thanks to you, girls, for asking the right question as well, the question that no one is asking, not just about how much money do you make.
You are so welcome. Yeah. I always love an exclusive, so that's like different questions.
Yeah,
that was great.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thanks to you.